it's just been one thing after the next this season, and it just it felt like just a nonstop, you know, calamity.
Welcome to WST, your West Coast source for sports, and today for USC football. We're joined by Brady McCullough, the USC beat writer for the LA Times. Welcome to the show, Brady.
Hey, thanks, Kyle. It's great to be on.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, depends on who you're talking to when it comes to USC, but yeah, I'm happy. I mean, there's a lot of news about you on the beat right now.
Hopefully this weekend will end with a USC win.
That would be something. That would be a story to tell. It's not looking likely, but that's when you play the games. You know, everyone knows that there's talent that just hasn't really been showing itself as often as one would like. But everyone knows there's talent on this USC roster. You know, the question is, will anybody be at the Coliseum on Saturday? I think you're going to have a lot of Notre Dame fans in the house. I know that. So, you know, how much of an advantage is USC going to have playing the Coliseum where, you know, probably half the fans there, even the ones wearing USC, you know, are going to be possibly deep down kind of rooting against the Trojans because they want a coaching change.
Well, before we get into that game, let's talk a little bit about the season so far. So USC is 5-6. They're coming off a devastating loss to their crosstown rivals, the UCLA Bruins. Can you talk to the status of Clay Helton?
Well, I'm headed out to practice, and he's going to be there wearing his USC cap, telling everybody Happy Tuesday and answering questions from the media. So the status as of now is that you know, a lot of athletic directors who know that they want to make a change at season's end would go ahead and get out in front of it, you know, even before the final game and say, you know, if Clem Swan knew that he was going to be getting rid of Helton, you know, it would make sense potentially for him to go ahead on Sunday of this week or whatever, said, you know, this is, we really appreciate everything Clay's done. This will be his last game coaching the Trojans against Notre Dame. You know, just to go ahead and get that cloud sort of uncertainty out of the way. The fact that that hasn't happened tells me that there's still a chance Clay Helton could be the coach in 2019. And not necessarily that he's coaching for his job, quote-unquote, on Saturday, because that would be pretty unfair considering, you know, he's got a 5-6 team and he's playing the number 3 team in the country.
If we look at this season and the stats around Clay Helton, where do you think things started to go wrong for the Trojans?
Well, they really, really, really started to go wrong. Gosh, you know, the second game of the year, I'd say the Texas game, the third game of the year is really where you started to see, you know, trends forming like that. This USC team, for whatever reason, just cannot melt the snowball. I mean, the snowball gets rolling against them in a game, and they just can't do anything to turn the tide back. You know, against Texas, they're up 14-3 early, and then they get totally blown out of there and lose, you know, 37-14. You know, against Utah, you know, a couple weeks later, after it seemed like USC had turned things around, they play at Utah, they're up 14-0 early, and then all of a sudden it's 34-14, two 34-point runs in those losses. You know, good teams that have a mental edge, don't allow 34-point runs. And it just seemed like throughout this season, USC, once things started going poorly, just for whatever reason, mentally as a group, were not able to pull together and turn the tide, make a couple positive plays in a row, get something moving. That, to me, has been the biggest issue with this team, is they just have not been able to answer when they've been challenged.
It's funny you bring up the Texas game, because I was actually at a wedding and I was excited because the person that I was sitting by was streaming the USC Texas game, and then I left to go grab some food, and by the time I came back, it was blowout city. It just happened so quick.
Yeah, Exactly. It did, you know? And by the way, like, shame on whoever planned a fall wedding. That's, like, my number one, like, faux pas in life is a fall wedding. But those people obviously, you know, are on my level about college football.
They definitely are. They're definitely not college football fans, but the college football fans were huddled up together, luckily, so we watched the game.
Yeah, that's great. Well, yeah, it was definitely a shocking result. I mean, USC had the field goal block in that one that if they had made that field goal, they would have been down 6 in the third quarter. But, again, you know, so the field goal is blocked and returned for a touchdown. It's 13. Well, Texas defense isn't very good. They could have gone back in the game, and they didn't. So it's just been one thing after the next this season, and it's felt like just a nonstop, you know, calamity.
They need an upset win on Saturday against number 3 Notre Dame to qualify for bowl eligibility with that 6th win. And in looking back, I think it was 2010 was the last time USC failed to get 6 wins. And that's when they dismissed Paul Hackett and they brought in Pete Carroll and that train started running.
That's right. That's right. It's, you know, there's certainly a lot of people that, you know, joke and call him, you know, Clay Hackett and all those things. Well, you know, Hackett didn't win a Rose Bowl, didn't, you know, have a Sam Darnold drafted 3rd overall, didn't have a Pac-12 championship. And that's what's crazy about this whole scenario is that, you know, people forget Clay Helton helped lead USC to their first Pac-12 title in nearly a decade last season. You know, but really didn't get much credit for it. Even entering this season, he still had so many people in the fan base down on him. And the reason is, it kind of goes back to what I was saying, that when they've been on a big stage and been playing a power team, Notre Dame, Ohio State last year in the Cotton Bowl, they kind of got their butts kicked. And that's what, you know, the record is what it is. And you know, I think USC fans are like, well, yeah, we're supposed to win the Pac-12. Well, they hadn't won the Pac-12. The last time they won it was still the Pac-10, you know, so... It's been tough, and yeah, they're in a tough spot here because yeah, this coach was doing so well. He got a nice contract extension after last year, and Lynn Swan has his name on that contract extension. And you know, what do you look like as an athletic director or an evaluator when you extend a guy's contract after a conference championship, and then the next year, you know, things aren't going well with a true freshman quarterback, and you pull the plug on him. So Swan's kind of, you know, part of what's going on, I think, is Swan is kind of boxed in a little bit.
Yeah, he'd have to pull it back, and after he put his name on it and endorsed him, he'd have to come, you know, what is it, a year later and make another move. So I think that's probably why he's being so cautious, and maybe he's taking a little bit extra time where everyone kind of sees the fate, but I think Lynn is going to try to give him every chance to continue on. So if we dive into the game a little bit, we got Notre Dame coming in, and last week against UCLA, the Trojans led up over 300 yards rushing on the ground. What are some of the things that the Trojans have to do differently to stop Dexter Williams and the running backs that Notre Dame will lead out there on Saturday?
Oh my gosh. I mean, that was really, really shocking. USC's run defense coming into that game, you know, they've had some games where they weren't, you know, great, but they haven't been just totally zip-like. And I think a lot of that was some Chip Kelly mastery, blocking scheme, unbalanced line, getting a lot more blockers on one side of the line of scrimmage. Things that USC knew they would need to prepare for, but ultimately, in practice, we're not able to get, you know, I'm not some X's and O's guy. You know, the term they kept using was gap integrity. Essentially, like, you know, there need to be dudes in the gaps, and there weren't dudes in the gaps. So, credit to UCLA. And, yeah, that should really scare USC because, you know, Notre Dame is a very, very good running football team, like you said, with Dexter Williams. Their backups are talented too. I think it'll be interesting scheme-wise to see if Notre Dame employs some of the same type of blocking scheme that Chip Kelly used to set Joshua Kelly free last week.
Read a little bit where some are saying this is the most well-established or most complete team that Brian Kelly has had during his tenure. You know, you got Ian Book, who came on in week three, and Notre Dame really hasn't missed a beat throwing to Miles Boykin and even Chase Claypool. So USC definitely has their hands full on Saturday. Who are some of the key players on the defensive side that you think need to have a big game for the Trojans to be successful?
You know, it's really going to – what happened, people like last year's Notre Dame game, and this was a much better USC team and not as good of a Notre Dame team last year. Notre Dame pushed USC around and beat the heck out of them in South Bend. So you've got I think definitely Brian Kelly's best Notre Dame team coming into USC in total disarray. It's got a bad look to it. I'm surprised the line in Vegas wasn't higher and came out, I think, minus 8, and it jumped up to minus 10 in some different spots. As far as what USC has to do, they've got to find some energy and some pride up front. You know, they have to have some hope at the point of attack to not get just totally pushed around. I mean, and that happened last year, like I said, with a much better USC team. So they've got to find something extra, and I don't know if they've got it. Team-wise, I just don't know exactly what they're trying to do. They don't seem to have a lot of down linemen that are able to really make an impact up front right now. But I think it ultimately kind of comes down to the seniors, like a Cam Smith, coming into the season, a first-team All-America candidate, a linebacker, a three-year starter coming into the season. This is his last game at the Coliseum. Marvell Tell, safety, going to be drafted. Vicky Marshall, cornerback, going to be drafted. These guys, their last time putting on that uniform and playing in the Coliseum, playing against their rival Notre Dame, then all of those seniors have to lead the way, and they have to play out of their mind. And then they need a couple of things to just go right. Things just haven't. They have not been able to create turnovers. That's the USC's offense needs that. They need a short field. They need some momentum plays. So they just need some things to bounce right in this rivalry game to really give them a jolt. Because just man on man, for 60 minutes, I just don't see it happening on Saturday.
It's going to be an uphill battle. Notre Dame's got a stable of horses. And, we just talked about the offensive side of the ball. If you look at the defensive side, Notre Dame's got a top-ranked defense. I think they're ranked 8th in the country in pass defense. And it's probably going to be the toughest defense that JT Daniels faces all year.
Exactly. This is one of the best defenses in the country. I'm a Michigan alum, and I follow the Wolverines pretty closely, and what they did to Michigan's offense in the opener was startling. I mean, Michigan's offensive line looked so bad that the whole fan base was freaking out that the team was going to be bad again this year, because Notre Dame just made them look so bad. The rest of the season, Michigan's offensive line looked just fine. So this is a Notre Dame defense that is going to basically do all the things that, most defenses USC's faced this year, which aren't anything close to as good as Notre Dame, have been able to do, which is rally USC's offensive line, get to JT Daniels, make him, uncomfortable and get him off his spot, make him make mistakes. So, I mean, it is going to be the biggest challenge JT Daniels has ever faced as a quarterback, and it's not even going to be close.
So speaking of JT, what are some of the things you think he needs to improve on to take that next step and become an elite quarterback?
He just needs time. I mean that in the sense of he needs time to throw. You look at some of the throws he made in that UCLA game, which are next level type throws. I mean, perfectly thrown touchdown pass over the top, Amon-Ra St. Brown. Well, there's he had a perfect pocket and he was able to make the throw and really give his receiver that perfect lead on a touchdown pass. JT can make the throw. He needs time in the pocket. And then the next thing, he needs his time as a player. He needs this offseason. He's a total film junkie. And that's what he's going to do after this season. He's going to retreat into the film. And he's going to come back a lot smarter and a lot more confident just from knowledge and a lot of data at his disposal about what went wrong this year, what went right. And I think you're going to see a much, much better quarterback as a sophomore. That's all the guy needs. It's not a matter of him not having the skill set. This is what USC asked for by starting a true freshman.
Yeah, and he's actually a true senior because he reclassified and he expedited his time frames and kind of thrown into the fire. But I do agree with you. I think it takes time, and he's such a talent that with that extra time and film work and preparation, he should be okay.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely, I know a lot of people in the fan base kind of expected him to be the savior of the offense. And it was just too much to add. JT's one of those kids from Orange County who had, you know, two quarterback coaches and, you know, a performance guru, a mental performance coach, you know, everything at his disposal to become, you know, one of the top high school quarterbacks in the country. And none of that can prepare you for being the quarterback at USC and spotlight that you're under and the pressure that comes with it.
Yeah. If we look a little bit to their recruiting class, you know, they have JT and they have St. Brown. Can you talk about some of the recruits they have coming in?
You know, it's a that's one of the big issues here with the season they're having. They already were kind of not, they had their class ranking was not what, you know, people would think that it would be when things started going badly. But it's gotten way worse. You know, they've had their top player commitment was the cornerback of St. John Bosco named Chris Steele, who is decommitted from USC. You know, he was their best recruit in the class. You've had some other guys, waffling. You know, really what I think the key is going to be is there's a couple of guys still out there, one of which is a former JT and Amon-Ra teammate, wide receiver at modern day named Brew McCoy. You know, if they can still get McCoy and at least got another like top offensive playmaker, you know, they've got a good running back in the class. You know, so it's just they're trying to piece together this class right now at a time when, you know, everybody's jumping off that, you know, play help bus, which is a tough thing. You know, so if they do decide to retain Elston and give him one more shot, you know, I think this recruiting class is gonna not be one that is ranked in the, you know, near the top five. You know, maybe they get a few guys like Brew McCoy to get their numbers up and approach the top 10 or in the top 20. But it isn't an overly impressive USC recruiting class.
And I'm sure Chip Kelly and other people in the Pac-12 are using the uncertainty around USC and Clay Helton's shaky status to recruit against the Trojans.
Absolutely. I mean, people will do whatever they can to get inside the heads of these kids, their advisors, their families. And that's the deal. At some point, Len Swan, and I think part of the reason that Len Swan came out 3 weeks ago and put his, you know, kind of public support behind Clay Helton was for the recruiting purposes and showing people that, you know, it's not going anywhere. You don't have to worry. If you are interested in USC, then you don't need to worry. Clay's going to be here. Clay has the support of the athletic director. You know, at this point, Len Swan hasn't said anything to the contrary. It's just people assume, given you lose to Cal and you lose to UCLA the way that they lost these games where they clearly could have won them and they're not bowl eligible yet, people just assume, well, Len Swan gave that, you know, vote of confidence, but, you know, he hasn't, you know. So at some point, Len, if Swan's going to keep him on, he's going to have to come out and say it. so that Clay Helton and his staff have a prayer of recruiting when they go out to recruit on Sunday after the Notre Dame game.
So getting back to the game, can you give us your prediction on the outcome?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I think it's going to be a real, real blowout. I mean, I don't think there's going to be – USC may have, you know, get some lucky rivalry, you know, breaks early, maybe cash in one or two of them, make things interesting. But eventually, given what we've all seen from this USC team, particularly this USC offense, there is no sense that they are going to have an ability to put together a four-quarter game against Notre Dame. And that's what it's going to take, because Notre Dame's offense got to put up points.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tricky, but hopefully the seniors can step up and get the team to rally around senior night and the possibility of an upset, which could lead to one more game, a bowl game, to kind of finish the season off on a strong note.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when it comes to be game time, USC is going to have some juice. They're going to be out there playing for pride and for the seniors. But that's only going to last so long. They need some things to go right early. They've been a pretty good team early lately, so there's a chance that the halftime score could look interesting. But I don't think it will go much further than that.
So last question, I'll let you get on with your day. I read that you wrote for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and you had a chance to travel to Cuba and the Dominican Republic to write about baseball. What was the most memorable part of that trip?
Oh, my gosh. That's a great question. There were so many unbelievable moments. I think that the one that really sticks out to me is being in Cuba and basically being with I went to a field where I had been told that this guy I was writing about, it was the Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen coach, this field where he had played baseball as a boy. And I go to that field, and there's a man there, and he is basically mowing the grass. And he, you know, is probably in his 50s, looks kind of like a washed-up ball player. And I come to find out that that man was one of the best pitchers of those glory years of the Cuban national team. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but this was like the equivalent for Cuban baseball of a Roger Clemens or a Randy Johnson. Or
That's like me running to Clayton Kershaw later in life.
Exactly. It'd be like if you ran into Clayton Kershaw, who had been, in 20 years, had been reduced to, basically being employed by the government to, mow the grass and take care of the baseball field. Realization of kind of where the Cuban baseball system had fallen, and also just the whole, communist experiment in Cuba kind of told through what's happened to the baseball, structure there. Because this guy, basically lived for, existence, where that's his life. This guy who was one of the greats of his time.
So I'm headed to Havana next spring. What are some of the best restaurants to go to?
Oh, wow. You won't have any problem with that. I don't remember any off the top of my head. It was kind of a work trip, and I definitely can't recall, but you won't have any problem finding some really great authentic cuisine. My advice would be take a little time at least to get out of the central kind of tourist Havana and make sure to go see the real Havana as well.
I will. Well, thank you for coming on, talking USC football, talking Havana, and closing it out with some good food.
Yeah, for sure. Well, enjoy your trip. That's going to be awesome.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and go Trojans.